Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Transportation Committee to order. The time is 1:30 p.m., the 1st of March, 2018. With me today is Senator McKinnon, Senator Bishop, myself, Stedman. We have a quorum to do business. We have three items up today, all first readings. We'll start with Senate Bill 163, Definition of Commercial Motor Vehicles by the Governor. We'll move on to House Bill 204, Overtaking Passing Roadwork Vehicles by Representative Kawasaki. And we'll finish up with House Bill 82, Off-Highway Driver's License by Christ Tompkins. Representative, that would like to start with SB 163 and Act Relating to Commercial Motor Vehicles. And online with us today is Deputy Commissioner Bender. If he can introduce himself for the record, who he represents, and introduce the bill, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm John Bender, Deputy Commissioner for Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, here to introduce Senate Bill 163, which proposes to bring Alaska's definition of commercial motor vehicle into the 21st century. Senate Bill 163's proposed changes will benefit farmers who transport agricultural commodities or supplies in Alaska because existing restrictions on farm vehicles limit their movement to within 150 miles of the farm. SB 163 will allow farmers to operate anywhere in Alaska. The Moving Ahead for Progress in the 21st Century, also called MAP 21, made the federal regulation of farmers less restrictive than our current existing language in Alaska statute. SB 163 also proposes the transportation of hazardous materials should be amended to only apply to quantities of substances that require a placard, regardless of the size of the vehicle. And finally, the definition of school bus is updated to provide clarity for when school buses are exempt from commercial motor vehicle requirements. That concludes my introduction. I understand Director Dan Smith is there as well, and together we'll address any questions you may have, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Mr. Smith, if you'd introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and take us a little further on this, please.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Dan Smith, and I'm the Director of Measurement Standards and Commercial Vehicle Enforcement. Section 1 of this bill is 1910-300. The area that we intended to change was in 1910-399, which is definitions. 1910-300 is financial responsibility, but since we're using this wording later on in the bill, this was to mirror those changes that you'll be seeing later. On page 2, line 4, when we start talking about covered farm vehicles, is really the meat of this bill. Presently, a farmer using a farm vehicle away from their farm, after 150 miles from that farm, they are then treated as though they're a motor carrier, meaning they would have to meet all the requirements of a carrier, having like a USDOT number, markings on their vehicles, that sort of thing. This change would allow them to operate anywhere in the state. The portion on page 2, line 29, when we get to placard, there are times when a commercial vehicle may be hauling a substance that is deemed a hazardous material, but it's not to any quantity that requires a placard. If I owned an air taxi, for instance, and I went and picked up a 55-gallon drum, that's not an amount of avgas. That's not an amount that would require a placard. So sometimes that situation arises, and we just want to be really clear when somebody is operating a vehicle as a commercial vehicle that then would be requiring a placard. The last change is to school buses and school bus operations. Presently in 1910-399, it says school buses are not commercial vehicles. So we wanted to make this change to clarify that school buses, when they're used for transporting school children from home to school or school to home, that is school bus operations, and they are exempt from the requirements. So right now it is too broad and it's not a compatible definition. We say all school buses. If a school bus in the summer is picking up down here and taking passengers from a cruise ship out to the glacier, that's a motor carrier of passengers at that time, and they would be regulated as such. They already know that because that's how we've been regulating them, because most of them are in interstate commerce already. and therefore are falling under a more restrictive rule.
Question, Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you describe what the commercial requirements are now for school bus drivers or for school buses?
Through the chair, Senator McKinney, for those exempt operations, I can't answer that question because DOT doesn't regulate them. I believe that's early education that sets those requirements for school buses when they are operating as a school bus. Once they're outside of that definition, absolutely, I can tell you the requirements for a motor carrier of passengers.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just trying to figure out if there's unintended consequences of the change of definition that will affect schools and the safety of the children that are being transported by changing this definition.
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, I don't know of any unintended consequences. For the most part, a lot of the school bus transport is being conducted by government agencies who are already exempt. For those motor carriers that do school bus operations and then would have operations as a commercial carrier, they are extremely stringent requirements for driver qualifications and vehicle requirements.
I'll follow up later.
Okay. And I'd like the record to show Senator Egan and Senator Wilson have arrived. Okay, go ahead and continue. Any more comments?
I have a question.
Just a second. Are you
finished? Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm okay. Finished.
Senator Bishop.
So the exemption for farmers to go, anywhere in the state now? And that for farmers to get the exemption to start with, that's federal law that allows them to operate without a CDL. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, you are correct. Yes, that is the 49 CFR.
Because I was thinking about, follow up.
Yeah, go follow up. You're going to become a farmer?
No, I was thinking about adding minors to this. This would, but you'd have to have the federal exemption. That's the way you're getting around it, because 49 CFR allows agriculture to have this exemption.
Through the chair, yes, Senator Bishop.
Thank you.
Other questions for the bill sponsor? Any other comments? Senator McKinnon.
Mr. Chairman, my only question is regarding safety and whether the roads will be safe with these types of vehicles on them without the same certification as a commercial. I understand the economic disadvantage for the farmers. Agriculture is a tough business to be in, and moving your goods to market is difficult. But the vehicles and the safety of those vehicles are still of concern to all of us. And so can you speak to the safety of farm vehicles on a road? I understand it's allowed. At a national level, but Alaska faces some severe winter conditions and others that require us to look at everything in a unique way. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, I believe that there will be no measurable effect on the safety. Unsafe operations are still prohibited. So if an enforcement officer was to witness any imminent hazard or danger, we would still address that. For the most part, this rule is already in effect for farmers in the state of Alaska. If they're in interstate or foreign commerce, they can move anywhere in the state. The only ones that we are now saying are those intrastate farmers.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Mr. Smith, The 18-wheeler farm vehicle, the operating, talking about safety, can you talk to us a little bit about that? So they're exempt from the DOT inspection, is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, if you are a farm vehicle, yes, you would meet the exception for covered farm vehicle or the existing farm vehicle exception. And so in addition to the markings, the other safety requirements, including 391, where the medical, and 383, where the driver qualifications is, they would also be exempt from those requirements.
Okay. Follow up?
Yes, go ahead.
So air brakes for farmers, are the tolerances for air brakes the same for farmers they are for a commercial carrier?
Through the chair, yes.
Okay. So. Thank you.
Any other initial questions for the bill sponsor? Okay, seeing none, we'll go to the public hearing portion. We will start with the, I guess, the off-net. And there's we have one person online, Mr. Evs Thompson. If you can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and speak to the bill, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Evs Thompson, the Executive Director of the Alaska Trucking Association. The Alaska Trucking Association is a statewide organization representing the interests of our nearly 200 member companies from Barrow to Ketchikan. Freight movement is an essential element of our economy and impacts all of us each day. I'm here to testify today in support of Senate Bill 163. Any effort to clarify the statutes makes it easier for our industry to understand and comply with the statutes and regulations governing the operation of our business. Senate Bill 163 reduces the burden on farmers and farm vehicles by removing the 150-mile restriction on farmers transporting their own, quote, covered farm vehicles, end quote, in the conduct of their business and allows them to operate statewide. It does make it clear that if they choose to enter the for-hire world, they will need to comply with the commercial vehicle rules and regulations. Senate Bill 163 provides certainty for motor carriers of passengers by clearly identifying school bus operations. School buses are not considered commercial motor vehicles while conducting, quote, school bus operations, end quote. They, too, will be required to comply with the commercial vehicle rules and regulations if they engage in for-hire transport in other than school bus operations. Senate Bill 163 also provides some clarification for carriers transporting hazardous materials in amounts that require a placard. The ATA urges the committee to consider these changes favorably as they will provide valuable clarifications. And I'll try to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Evs Thompson. We have no questions. Thank you for your testimony today. We have completed the off-net, and there's nobody in the LIOs signed up that I see here. We'll go into the room. Anybody in the room here to testify on this bill? Seeing nobody in the room, we will close the public hearing portion. We'll come back to the committee. Any before we set this bill aside, any questions for the bill sponsor? Any final comments from the bill sponsor before we set this bill aside?
No further comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We will set this bill aside. Next up, House Bill 204, an act relating to overtaking and passing certain stationary vehicles. And we have a bill here by Representative Kawasaki. And we have an enthusiastic presenter that does not look like the representative. So if you could introduce yourself and your affiliation and introduce the bill to the committee, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is William Jidwala, staff for Representative Scott Kawasaki. Due to a small conflict of interest, Rep. Kawasaki couldn't make it this afternoon, so you'll be stuck with me for the next while. But he sends his appreciation for the hearing and plans on being present for subsequent meetings.
Please repeat your last name.
Oh, yes, sir. William, through the chair, William Judd Wallace.
Judd Wallace?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Before I get started, I'd just like to first give a quick shout-out to a man who is been with us lockstep throughout this entire process, Mr. Dan Carson, a former equipment operator in Fairbanks. For Department of Transportation, who brought this issue to our office in the first place and who you'll probably hear from in a couple minutes. Now, though, with the indulgence of the chair, I will speak briefly as to current statute, what the bill does, what changes have been made from its original version, and the penalties that come with any violation of what this bill puts forward before moving on and being available to answer any questions that the members of the committee may have. So to begin, under AS 28.35.185A, drivers are required to vacate the nearest lane or slow down when approaching certain stationary emergency and service vehicles which are flashing emergency lights on a highway or roadway. Such vehicles currently include emergency, fire, law enforcement, animal control vehicles, and tow trucks in the act of picking up a vehicle. This bill adds vehicle in the act of performing maintenance or road service work to the list of vehicles subject to the existing move-over law, allowing private contractor municipal maintenance vehicles to fall under its jurisdiction, including Department of Transportation. So under this bill, if a driver approaches one of these vehicles, those performing maintenance or road service work, which is displaying flashing emergency lights on a highway with two or more lanes, the driver shall vacate the lane closest to the vehicle or slow down to a reasonable speed if they cannot vacate the closest lane safely. On a road with fewer than two lanes, the driver shall slow down to a reasonable speed considering traffic, roadway, and weather conditions. Now that I've gone over current statute as well as the current bill and what it does, I'll discuss the changes made from the original version of the bill to the present. So originally, as introduced to House Transportation, this bill would have added AS 28.35.185, added under that statute, DOT vehicles with flashing lights that are performing road maintenance or road work. In the same committee, however, members raised concerns that the bill's scope was perhaps too narrow and should instead be altered as to encompass private contractors and municipal maintenance vehicles as well. So reflecting this concern, we worked with the House Judiciary Chairman and committee members and widened that scope to reflect that. So additionally,
I think we won't get too worked up about what the other body did. We'll work with the final bill.
Pardon me, sir. Yeah. Excuse
we'll
me.
Work with the final bill.
Excuse me. Yes, sir.
Do you have any other comments on the bill as it sits before us?
Yes, sir. If I may just speak to the penalties under the statute. Yeah. So under the statute 28.35.185, failure to move over is a Class A misdemeanor if personal injury results from a person's failure to vacate the lane or slow down. Failure to move over that does not result in personal injury is punishable by a $150 fine and 2 points assessed against the driver's license. This statute has been effective since September 2005. We confirmed with municipal police departments that they enforce the same statute, and Alaska State Trooper Captain Loudon can speak further to enforcement aspects if questions do arise regarding that nature. So in conclusion, House Bill 204 would help reduce the likelihood of work zone-related accidents and tragedies and help make our road a safer place to both drive and work. Thank you.
Any initial questions from committee members before we open the public hearing? Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a similar questions here. So currently, we have work zones that require folks to slow down. Those signs are normally posted for a lot of the DOT projects that are for extensive miles. How does this bill enact that will change those laws or regulations on a two-lane highway where we're already slowed down in a cone, but they're working on one side of the first mile, the second side of the other mile? Or do you expect drivers to keep switching back and forth to lanes when they're working on those sides? But we already have those double fines. I just don't really see the additional need for this piece of legislation for that.
Can you help? Senator, with this question, please.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Wilson. So with the work zones, as you mentioned, there's already things in place such as double fines or being required to slow down and yield as signs direct you to. This would be in situations of someone working on the side of the road where those signs might not have been placed. So then incident in the sponsor statement that's mentioned where in 2012 where Mr. Robert Hamill was tragically struck by a car, he was helping law enforcement by laying down cones and so that they could clear a wreck on the side of the road. And so it's those sorts of incidences where they're pulled over, maybe they're working on something a little off to the side or filling a pothole where it isn't expressly a double fine zone that the lane would be vacated or one would slow down.
Okay, follow up.
So follow up to that then. What is the requirement for for DOT, can anyone who's working on a road, filling a pothole, working on a guardrail, can they set up a, this is a work zone, a slower speed sign? I'm just not familiar with that process. Maybe that may be a question for DOT as well.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I believe that would be a question best deferred to
DOT,
Department of Transportation.
Senator Bishop.
Yeah, let me help you explain this a little bit. So you have a construction project that has an approved traffic plan in it. Let's say it's a bidded, it's a bid awarded DOT highway construction project. So we got two issues here. So this bill with an approved DOT approved traffic plan, okay, that's over here. This bill is, as I interpret it, is trying to fix what's not a DOT awarded construction plan to a to a private contractor. Okay, this bill is like Senator Wilson said, it's a maintenance. There could be a maintenance issue here where DOT is doing a pothole repairs or doing an overlay where they will have two flaggers, they'll have two lighted signs on either ends of the job. But this is getting a little tighter yet, where it might just be a one truck pothole patch or a recovery effort of a tow vehicle, etc. This is covering outside of a controlled traffic plan approved by DOT.
And we have DOT coming up here shortly. Other questions for the bill sponsor? Do you have any response to Senator?
Through the chair, I would simply thank Senator Bishop for that explanation, because I think it's better than what I offered.
Any other initial questions? Okay, thank you. We're now going to open up the public hearing process. I think we'll start with Bob Anderson, Chief of Maintenance and Operations at DOT, if he can introduce himself for the record and who he represents, and speak to this bill, please.
Yes, good afternoon, Chair Simon and committee members, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Bob Anderson. I am the Central Region Chief of Maintenance and Operations with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. DOT and PF supports this legislation as it has potential to provide additional safety for our crews that are working along our roads and highways every day. Our maintenance operators are the people you see every day working to provide safe routes for Alaskans. Higher risk situations they face daily include out of control vehicles, road debris, and close proximity to traffic. The approval of this bill could potentially minimize these risks. Some pertinent statistics included from the U.S. DOT Federal Highway Administration work zone accident data indicate over 96,000 work zone crashes occurred in 2015, approximately 89,000 work zone crashes in 2014, and then in 2013, approximately 68,000 work zone crashes. On average, nationally, a work zone crash occurs every 5.4 minutes, with 0.7% of those resulting in a fatality. Just last month in Colorado, a maintenance worker was struck by filling bottles, and that worker sustained fatal injuries. In Alaska, we've experienced our own loss, as alluded to Mr. Hamill earlier. He was struck while he was trying to provide assistance, and that ended up in a fatal fatality. We've also experienced other crashes in our work zones that have thankfully avoided serious injury. In 2016, along the Glen Highway, one of our trucks was hit by a motorist. In 2015, one of our crews patching potholes along the Glen Highway, and one of their trucks rear-ended, causing substantial damage, but thankfully no serious injuries. Our staff generally wants to make our roads safe for all motorists and takes great pride in the work that they do. DOT and PF supports House Bill 204 and hopes it provides it for safer work zones for our crew and the traveling public, and will help ensure we don't endure another tragic loss or injuries to our team. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. That concludes my testimony. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, Ms. Second here. Senator Wilson.
Yes, if Mr. Anderson can sort of answer my question on how sort of those the procedure in placing the safety zones, can that be utilized for folks or for simple road maintenance projects? Could you put up the sort of the double fine, the work zone requirements, or with that within sort of guardrail repairs or without the Mr. Senator Bishop explained that earlier.
Okay. Mr. Anderson, could you help Senator Wilson with this question, please?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Wilson. I believe this bill is more pointed towards work that is done by maybe one or two personnel at one time, where we don't have to go through the process of setting up a complete traffic control plan. We do have policies that dictate that we use traffic control plans, but they are quite a bit different than what we typically see on a construction project. You know, for issues like you referred to on a guardrail repair, we dictate that our crews park, you know, safely off the side of the road and out of harm's way, and we have emergency flashing lights on, but there might not be the whole contingent of warning signs leading up to the work zone.
Do we have a follow-up?
I guess, Mr. Chair, if we can get a copy of sort of how that plan works or the regulations and the rules requirements for some of those setups would be helpful.
Okay. Yes. Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you tell me, is there any increased liability as we expand our definitions beyond the public sector? Beyond the public sector, I see we have tow trucks listed in here, so we have made an exception once now for tow trucks. But the bill as it was introduced was limited to state, and so it seems like we're expanding it, which would be a good thing in the sense that more people would be protected. But will the general public be able to recognize those that are performing maintenance that might be in these corridors?
Mr. Anderson, could you help with that question? And if you can't, that's fine. Just let's say so.
Yes, through the chair, Senator McKenna. I understand that the proposed regulation was changed to reflect all maintenance vehicles. I don't see any added liability because of that. And there is still a requirement of having the emergency flashing lights, which I think would just add additional protection to anybody in the public engaged in that kind of activity.
Yes, Senator Bishop.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And in following along with Senator McKinnon's line of questioning, let's say hypothetically this bill was to become law. DOT does a good job with PSAs. Showing sanders and motor graders, et cetera, from time to time on the TV, and to stay back, you know, the 100 feet or and et cetera. Maybe if this bill was to become law, they could run some more PSAs showing maybe some tow truck scenarios, some emergency vehicle scenarios, and, I don't know, just informing the public of the change.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for DOT? Chief of Maintenance, Central Region. Seeing none, we'll go to the next person on the list, Dan Carson of Fairbanks. If you can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and speak to the bill, please.
My name is Dan Carson. I represent myself. I used to work for DOT in Fairbanks as an equipment operator, and that was where I got the idea to call about this this bill. From my experience, I look at it as a worker out there on the road, and the majority of traffic was not slowing down or moving over to allow us to do our jobs, whether we're filling potholes or anything. It's majority of traffic considers us as in their way, and it's a scary proposition to be on a road where the speed limit is 55 and traffic is zipping by you with a foot and a half of clearance at speed. And so that is why I looked at this and thought that this would be a good idea to protect our the workers that are out there on the road. I no longer am employed by DOT, but it would still keep those people safe.
Okay, so you support the bill?
Oh, absolutely, I support this bill.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next on the list, Dustin Witt from Fairbanks. A DOT official, if you could introduce yourself for the record and who you represent and speak to the bill, please.
My name is Dustin Witte. I work up here at Fairbanks DOT. I just want to show support for House Bill 204. I'm in charge of the sign shop as well as guardrail and fence. So I'm out on the roadways, you know, all day, every day. So we got a lot of distractive drivers, a lot of distractive drivers these days. And I think this House Bill 204 would really keep everybody that works on the roads, from tow truck drivers to DOT personnel, safer. So I just wanted to show support and say thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you. Both the last two callers for calling in. That concludes everybody in the off-net that wanted to testify, but we do have a Dan Loden, captain of the state troopers, on for questions, so I'm going to ask him to come on and have some brief comments on this bill, if he would, please, after he introduces himself.
Hello, sir. This is Captain Dan Loden with the Alaska State Troopers in Anchorage.
So you support the bill?
I'm not certain that we've taken a position, but I believe that if, when we do, it will probably be to support the bill. It's clearly intended to make people safe that are working along the roadway, and I don't see why we wouldn't, but I haven't heard yet from the commissioner's office, so I can't give you a definitive answer.
Okay, that's probably the proper answer to have. Any questions for him? We have a question for you from Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm not sure that this is the right person to ask the question to, but with the flashing lights as a criteria, does that create any problems in the summer when folks might not have flashing lights? So in reference to Senator Bishop and the idea that we have private contractors working in roadways or along corridors, and that they're private sector individuals as well as public service individuals are at increased risk with higher speed traffic going by. Is it normal for all projects, whether it's during summer or winter, to have flashing lights on the roadways when they're doing maintenance work?
Senator, through the chair, I don't know of a regulation that specifically states that. There is a regulation about towing vehicles having flashing lights, but I suspect from what I've seen, almost all vehicles that are doing road work in manners that put them alongside the roadway, they already have lights. And I think, as it was discussed earlier, that I don't believe that this bill is intended for construction sites that extend for a distance along the highway. I think this is intended for the single kind of vehicle that they might be changing a street light. They might be, as they already mentioned, doing potholes or working alongside a guardrail or that sort of thing, maybe clearing brush. So I would suspect that they would all have lights, and it certainly would seem to me that if they didn't, it would in fact be hard for someone in the public to understand that, oh, that's what's going on here, and I need to comply with this statute.
Mr. Chairman, just as a follow-up, and it doesn't need to be today, but in Anchorage, I know that we have had casualties beyond performing maintenance or road service, but when contractors are out in the right-of-way, they're doing the same thing, and they usually have stationary equipment alongside of the road as well, and those Alaskans are in harm's way if you don't slow down or move over. I'm maybe it wasn't last year because we were in session for so long, but the summer, certainly in the last few summers, we have had some incidences of near-death experiences with contractors having people in those right-of-ways. And to me, it seems like it would qualify based on the new language coming out of the Judiciary Committee that a vehicle performing maintenance is reconstruction of a road or road service work, that's reconstruction, that it would qualify. So I guess it's twofold. I need to know whether this definition will extend to contractors in a roadway, and then if not, why? And then I also need to know if in the summer, if you don't have flashing lights, then that would exempt those contractors or require additional expense on state contracts or municipal contracts to add the flashing lights, and is that what we want to do? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We'll on those definitions as we go forward. Any other questions for Mr. Loden? Okay, thank you, Captain, for your time today. That concludes our list of off in the off-net. We'll come into the room. We have two people signed up. We might as well continue with DOT. They're enthusiastic today on this bill. Matt Walker. You can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and maybe you can help answer some of these questions that have been circulating around the table today.
Absolutely. Good afternoon, Chair Stebbin and the committee members. My name is Matt Walker. I am the State Traffic and Safety Engineer with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. To fulfill the department's mission to keep Alaska moving, our employees are frequently on or adjacent to roadways and moving traffic. We're inspecting bridges and roadways to identify repairs that extend our infrastructure's life. We're designing our infrastructure for safer and more efficient movement by the public. We're assisting with emergency response. We're performing maintenance and operation activities like snow and ice removal, and repairing signs and pavement markings and roads and bridges and guardrail. These are only a few of the activities necessary to get Alaskans and our visitors where they need to go. This work comes with obvious risks. We direct our employees to follow departmental safety policies while performing their duties. We wear highly visible clothing and other personal protective equipment. We set up traffic control devices in accordance with Alaska's and national standards, and we move our vehicles as far from the traveled way as possible and use flashers trying to prevent secondary crashes. These policies all help keep safety in our minds, but risks still remain for our employees and for Alaska's traveling public as we work in and next to traffic which may not provide space by moving over or comfort by slowing down. This bill would provide the statutory basis for to further reduce the risks to DOT and PF employees and the public, and that's why the department supports House Bill 204. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I would be happy to answer any questions from the committee.
Can you help clarify any questions that Senator McKinnon had?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator.
You can have her restate those if you'd like to also.
Yes. Thank you. Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, if you could restate that, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Certainly. Mr. Walker, we have construction crews that I'll use the Muldoon Bridge as an example, where there was construction and barriers and cones, everything set up. And it seems to me that based on the language that's coming over from the other body, the act of performing maintenance or road service work, that private contractors would be now included in this new definition. So that's the first question. Is that accurate? Because before it was much more narrow, and I certainly supported the previous iteration of the bill where it was DOT, that's who we were protecting, but I think it's a good conversation that we have contractors in the roadway that are placing their lives at risk as well as DOT employees or other municipal folks. So
I'll attempt to shed some light on that through the chair, Senator McKinnon. These contractors do work for the department. So I think the fact that they are on the road performing maintenance work, they would be covered as they have the flashers up. They are still required to put up traffic control when they're doing work for the department, according to the Alaska Traffic Manual, just as our maintenance personnel are required to do.
Mr. Walker, if I could get a definitive, maybe touch base with the Department of Law, because certainly for me, those contractors that are working in the roadway should be protected, and we should educate, as Senator Bishop suggested, the general population to know that if somebody is stationary in a roadway operating on a road, they should move to the left. They should vacate the closest lane to provide additional protection to those working in the roadway. And the secondary concern is requiring the flashing lights. I'm not sure they're always there in the summer. Now, maybe I'm just not seeing them because it's light for some time during an Alaska summer, but if we could check on whether those lights are required currently on all projects or whether those lights stop flashing during daytime hours, because then that might negate them from being part of this if the flashers aren't going.
Can you help clarify that? Or?
Yes, through the chair, Senator McKinnon. The Alaska Traffic Manual requires vehicles that are performing these operations and either moving road work or short duration road work to still have the lights on top. Now, whether those vehicles have the same lights as our maintenance vehicles have, which are the strobe lights and the full bar, or just a, say, rotating light on top that may not be as noticeable. I don't know that we have requirements on the type of lights the contractors have on their vehicles, but according to the Alaska Traffic Manual, vehicles doing this kind of road work should have those lights on.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions for our state safety and traffic engineer? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. I assume you support the bill or the department.
Yes. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. We have one other person signed up to testify today, Trenton English. He can introduce himself for the record, who he represents, unwrap his watered-up testimony, and proceed, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Trenton English. I'm here representing the Alaska Laborers to show our support for HB 204. We represent many men and women throughout the state that spend a great deal of time working alongside our roadways, doing everything from brush clearing to making sure our traffic lights are working. Their work demands their full concentration, and distractions are dangerous. Each year we hear stories of road workers being injured or even killed because of being struck by cars. We routinely see drivers passing through work zones at high rates of speeds, often distracted by phones and other devices. The additions HB 204 makes to the move over law will go a long way to keeping these men and women safe. Thank you.
And you support the bill?
Yes, sir.
Don't forget to tell us that.
I said that right in the beginning, didn't I?
Yeah. Good. Yeah, thank you. That concludes everybody in the office. Anybody else want to come forward today? Come on up here. If you can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don Etheridge with the AFL-CIO for Alaska. I didn't plan on testifying, but to answer Senator McKinnon's questions is, this bill is intended to cover construction. That's why we had the changes made to cover all workers on the highways when construction and DOT maintenance folks, and we requested that change in the other body to protect those guys that are out there working construction, because we have electricians go out that are changing light poles and lights and so forth, and they are at risk.
We'll have a brief at ease while Senator Egan's staff handles important phone calls.
Yeah, staff will buy
at ease.
Next Tuesday, Mr. Chairman. Not me, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Okay, we're ready to go again.
They handed out that, it doesn't go with this bill. I saw that, too. Yeah. They have handed up a Senate bill with it.
Yeah. Okay, we'll come back on.
We have the electricians that work on the roads putting in new light poles at times. They're working on light wiring and so forth. And we also have laborers and operators that work out on the highway. So we requested that they all be protected along with that. And the lighting is required, and when we train our traffic supervisors and so forth, they have to let all of our folks know that they are required to have the caution lighting when they go out, along with signage.
Any other questions for Mr. Etheridge? Okay, thank you for coming forward.
Yes, Chair.
Anybody else want to come forward in the audience? Seeing none. That takes care of everybody, off-net LIOs and in the room. So we'll close public hearing on this bill. If we can have the bill sponsor come forward. We will adjust the paperwork with inside the packets here for the next hearing. So do you have any final comments before we set this bill aside?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Any final questions? Thank you. We'll set this bill aside for further review. Next up, House Bill 82, an act relating to vehicle registrations relating to off-highway restricted areas and relating to motor vehicle liability insurance. If we can have Rep. Trice Compkins come forward, please. And this person doesn't look like the representative. If he could introduce himself for the record, who he represents, and take us through this bill, please.
Thank you, Chairman Stemmen and members of the Senate Transportation Committee. For the record, my name is Noah Starr, staff to Representative Christ Tompkins. Unfortunately, the representative is in Anchorage, but we're both glad that today HB 82 is in front of the committee for consideration.
Is he doing district work in Anchorage?
I believe he's presenting at a conference. Okay.
Go ahead and continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. HB 82 seeks to restore off-highway driver's license eligibility to the communities of Cake, Hoonah, Angoon, Saldovia, and Hyder. What is an off-highway driver's license? An off-highway license allows drivers to become legally licensed without taking a road test, exempting residents of small communities from traveling by ferry or plane to a faraway DMV office. To obtain an off-highway driver's license, an individual only has to complete a written test. As of last year, there were 1,120 off-highway driver's license in Alaska, operating in 294 off-highway communities. In 2012, constituents from Angoon notified Representative Christ Tompkins that residents of Angoon, Cake, and Hoonah have been denied off-highway driver's licenses. Despite a multi-decade history of applying for and using off-highway driver's licenses, these residents were no longer eligible for off-highway licenses. Suddenly, Angoon, Cake, and Hoonah residents were faced with uncomfortable decisions. Residents had to choose, either pay hundreds of dollars to fly to Juneau to take a road test using an unfamiliar vehicle, or stop driving legally. In the supporting letters that accompany today's presentation, as well as the testimony, you will read how off-highway driver's license ineligibility affected these constituents. Why did Angoon, Cake, and Hoonah find themselves ineligible for the licenses that they had historically used? New regulation with inconsistent application. To be eligible in the status quo, a community must not be, quote, connected to the land-connected state highway system with no access to a DMV office. Additionally, a community must have an average traffic count lower than 499 cars in order to be eligible for an off-highway driver's license. But these regulations are inconsistently applied. For example, Metlakatla and Sandpoint have ferry access but are off-highway driver's license eligible. HB 82 realigns off-highway driver's license eligibility with a common sense and historical understanding of which communities need off-highway driver's licenses. HB 82 is simple. The bill asks, one, is an area off the road system, and two, does the area not have a DMV? A yes to both of those questions means a community should qualify for an off-highway driver's license. That's what our bill does. At this point, if it'd be useful to the committee, Chairman Stebbin, I would gladly proceed into a sectional analysis. So section one as you'll see on page one, speaks to vehicle registration exemptions. This section exempts non-commercial vehicles with valid driver's licenses, including restricted off-highway driver's licenses, from registration. The bill does not touch commercial driver's licenses, as that's a question of federal law. Section 2 of the bill, which you'll see begins on line 19, makes the central policy change in the bill. Now the Department of Motor Vehicles will be required to publish a list of areas which do not have land-connected road access to a driver's test location. The Department of Motor Vehicles will publish that list. Sections 3 and 4, beginning on line 24 for Section 3, and then carrying all the way over to line 1 on page 4 for Section 4, both make a similar conforming change. Both sections make it so drivers in off-highway areas in the list put out by the DMV cannot be required to use ignition interlock devices. Section 5, which will take you all the way towards line 1, page 5, exempts non-commercial vehicles driven in off-highway areas listed by the DMV from vehicle insurance. Section 6 and 7 again make a conforming change. You'll see them starting on line 19 and then line 24 for Section 7. Both sections make it so drivers cannot be required to use ignition interlock devices for drivers in the off-highway areas listed by DMV. And then finally, Section 8 repeals statute that would require DMV to publish a list of communities exempt from insurance and registration because they are off-highway, because the amended Section 2 already requires DMV to make that list public. I stand ready for any questions.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a few questions. Let's start. We're constantly reminded by our Juneau Senator upon how a lot of the folks don't pay their fair share of the roadways. DOT does maintain some of the roads or build some of the new highway miles within some of these communities. And so the fees not being paid is a bit of a concern, but more of a concern is why not have motor vehicle insurance be required for some of the drivers of the off-road access. I mean, that just seems that other motor vehiclists, for if they do get an accident, because they may not go through the same training or have the driver's road test, so some may theorize that those folks may not be as safe as someone who would go through the DMV process, take the written test and the road test to be commercially licensed, to not to have those individuals who drive motor vehicles, which is can be considered a deadly weapon for some, to not to be insured. I don't understand the reason of why.
Can you help Senator Wilson with that question, please?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Wilson. The policy question of whether or not off-highway communities should be exempt from registration or insurance is untouched by HB 82. That exemption is already on the books and was on the books for the period of time that I mentioned, where the communities of Vangoon, Cake, and Hoonah had off-highway eligibility. So HB 82 only seeks to conform existing statute, which affords an exemption to these communities, to the new method that we suggest be used to determine if a community is off-highway.
Yeah. Senator Wilson, follow-up?
Yeah, so would that include for our Marine Highway? So can these off-road communities can commute through the Marine Highway to another off-road community as well and still be exempt through those status and process?
Can you help Senator Wilson with that?
I think so. Through the chair, Senator Wilson, my understanding is that if someone with an off-highway driver's license were to drive onto the ferry, take the ferry to another off-highway community, they would be able to drive with their off-highway driver's license. If they were to take the ferry from an off-highway community to Juneau, let's say, they would need someone with a normal license to accompany them in the vehicle, similar to how a provisional license might work if you were driving in Anchorage or Juneau.
Yeah. Another follow-up, Senator Wilson?
I'll yield.
We have a question over here. Senator McKinnon.
Sure. You know, what's great about serving the people of Alaska is understanding individual needs in other communities. And so I appreciate that these are existing policies, but the interlock seems to be a new policy. So can you speak to me about the new policy on interlock first?
Go ahead.
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon. The interlock conforming changes in the bill is not a new policy. In fact, it is actually just a conforming change. So the same list that was used to determine off-highway communities was used to exclude communities from being required from purchasing an interlock ignition device. The reason for that being, based on our conversations with folks, is that it's can be prohibitively difficult to acquire an interlock ignition device in these same communities, which is why the same list is used.
Follow up.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Starr, is that because transmitting electronically information, or do you know historically why that hasn't been done? Again, it's an opportunity to learn about a community. Why has Alaska chosen that in the past? Do you know?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon. First, I can find out more specific historical data for the subsequent committee hearing. I'll say our understanding from conversations is that it is prohibitively difficult to install an interlock ignition device in some of these communities. And I have a list of the locations where there are interlock ignition device installers that I'd be happy to share with the committee at the next hearing. And that list does not overlap with the off-highway communities that are listed.
And you could get back to the committee with that, and Senator
Kinnon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I have not flipped through the PowerPoint that I have here. Is there a distinction then between a regular driver's license and an off-highway driver's license so that it's easily identifiable and that the people in Angoon, Kay, Kuna, or other areas that are off the system, I think you referenced not Cordova, but on the chain, Cold Bay or others, is there a distinction between the two driver's licenses, or is it just a restriction on the driver's license?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, I'll take a first stab, and then I know we have someone from the Department of Motor Vehicles on the line who can speak more specifically. My recollection is that that they do look different. I think the question is of whether or not there's a photo, but I defer to the department to give you the most exact answer on how those licenses differ.
Right. We can have that when that time comes. Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just say that it concerns me that we're creating a different group of folks that don't have to have insurance and that could be unsafe in their community based on not having equitable distribution of regulations or laws. But I will withhold judgment until I hear more, because I do know that individual communities struggle with different things. Mr. Chairman, I lived on Dutch Harbor before there was a bridge. And so it's isolated. It's very small, about 2 miles wide. And so it would have been difficult without a boat to get over to Unalaska to find groceries. So I know that depending on where you live, challenges are different. So I'll refrain in judgment until I hear a little bit more. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions for the bill sponsor? Okay. You have one?
Just a comment, sir.
Yes. Senator Bishop.
So everybody was good until somebody interpreted the marine highways as counting as access. Is that right?
If you could touch on that, please.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, that is correct. In short, in 2014, there was also an additional component of regulation promulgated that added this traffic count question, which is also potentially problematic because traffic count is not always kept up in rural communities throughout the state. So I'd say they're both at issue.
So you can get back to the committee on that subject, because the marine highway is a highway, and why it was included and why you feel it should be excluded. Other questions for the bill sponsor?
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate you acknowledging the marine highway is a highway, because you know, we have those arguments where I've been known to challenge the fee structure for Marine Highway, and so now the Marine Highway isn't a highway. And, you know, that's inconsistent also. I'm getting kicked under the table by Senator Eakin. I just want everyone to know. I'm just teasing Senator Eakin. So I appreciate you raising that as an issue, because if you're from an – if depending on where you live in Alaska, these are different issues. If you live in Juneau and you or any other community and you benefit from the Marine Highway System, you fight for that, and the subsequent – dollars that the state invests on those communities' behalf to run that system. And if you're on the highway system, you're burdened from some perspective with insurance and interlock devices and other state regulation that now is being treated different because of the Marine Highway. So I'm not going to get controversial about it, but I would concur that that we're asking for a different treatment when you're connected to the Marine Highway System under this particular scenario. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes,
the Marine Highway is a highway, a scenic byway, and
it's on the system.
It's on the, yeah. So, any other questions? Okay. So before we go on to, okay, thank you, Star. We might as well start with the DMV. We're going to have the public hearing portion. We'll start with the off-net. We'll ask Marla Thompson. She can introduce herself for the record and who she represents. And even though you're marked for questions, if you have any comments on the bill, I'd like to hear them. If not, we'll have a couple questions for you.
Okay, great. For the record, my name is Marla Thompson, and I'm the director of the DMV. And so I was here to answer questions today. I know the one question I did hear was, is the current off-highway driver's license marked in any way? Today it's considered more of marked as a restriction. And we've actually redesigned it and are getting ready to launch a new updated version that will make it very clear that that's an off-highway license.
And then there was a earlier concern on an interpretation change dealing with some of the remote communities that are attached to the Marine Highway. Do you have any comments on that issue?
The only thing that I would comment on that is that because the DOT only does the traffic counts on their on a schedule that they've got, it's not always accurate, and things can change. And from the DMV's point of view, if it changes, it becomes more confusing for the people who live there, because one day they might have an off-highway license, and then the next day, because now it's 498, the traffic, then we have to take that away from them, and frankly, that's an expense, and it's very confusing for folks. So that's my comment on that.
Okay. Senator Wilson, you have a question for the DMV official.
Yes. Thank you, Ms. Thompson. Fees not paid. Why... What do the normal registration fees go to for the DMV that they currently collect for the communities that are not in the off-road community?
Ms. Thompson, can you help us with that? Or if you're not comfortable answering that, we can get that response elsewhere.
That would probably be great, because we're responsible for collecting it and collecting the registration. But that would there would not be a registration fee from those communities any longer.
Okay, thank you. We'll get that question answered to you.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the DMV official? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony today. We have Dave Epstein from DOT. He's on for questions, but do you have any? I'd like to hear from you if you can help us with any of these concerns we've kicked around.
Certainly, Senator.
You can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and then help the committee if you could.
Through the chair, thank you, Mr. Stedman. My name's David Epstein. I am the regional traffic and safety engineer for the South Coast region of DOT, based here in Juneau.
Is the Marine Highway a highway or a floating bunch of chaos?
Through the chair, I have not had occasion to do much with the Marine Highway system. As was noted previously, I believe we do not perform traffic counts on the ships. Closest association I have with the Marine Highway system is, for example, signing and striping plans in the parking lots.
Okay. We have any questions for something? Senator McKinnon.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a question, but I believe we're provided Marine Highway counts on a regular basis. So I just wanted to make sure the record reflects that we might have a different analysis of that.
Yes, we have an accurate count of the car deck and ridership on the Marine Highway from point to point. Okay, we'll go on to the next person on the list, and Georgina Davis Gaslum from CAKE, and I apologize for messing up your name, but hopefully I got one of the three correct.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, and Senate Transportation Committee, my name is Georgina Davis Gaspelin, representing myself, a resident of CAKE, Alaska, for most of my life. I'm here today to speak in support of House Bill 82, specifically the off-road system restricted non-commercial driver's license section. I would like to address financial and geographical difficulties of rural residents traveling to DMV offices to take the road tests. Residents living in rural communities not considered off-highway have many obstacles to overcome in order to receive our driver's licenses that urban residents do not face. Number one, since there is no DMV office in my community, we must travel to Juneau, Sitka, or Wrangell to take the written and road tests. Sitka DMV only administers road tests on Tuesdays and Thursdays. If the ferry schedule coincides, this trip would cost at least $100 one way, plus hotel and food. If the ferry schedule does not coincide, flying in a small plane costs $320 round trip. If we get stormbound, which happens often, add $150 a day for expenses, not counting time away from work. Number two, to take the road test, drivers must borrow or rent a car or take our own vehicle. I calculated my vehicle plus driver ticket on the ferry at $228 one way, even with senior citizen rate. With the cuts in ferry service to our communities, the March schedule shows a 12-day waiting period between ferries going to Juneau and back to CAKE. It would be much less time-consuming and less of a financial burden if we were only required to take the written test rather than having to pay the $700-plus expense of taking the road test. Especially for CAKE residents whose unemployment rate at times has reached 80%, or for senior citizens living on a fixed income. I am 65 years old and only wish to drive in my village of CAKE. When I am in Juneau or Sitka by myself, I would rather take a bus or a cab than drive. Others have told me that they also only drive in the village and do not even consider driving in the city. As a lifelong resident of the state of Alaska, I urge you to pass HB 82 and once again include CAKE, Enboon, and Puna as locations authorized for off-highway driver's licenses. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of this bill.
Thank you for your testimony today. That concludes our list of LIO and off-net. We'll come into the room. Just a second here. Senator Egan, you look like you're enthusiastic.
Yeah,
you have a question.
Thank you for coming, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to get it clear. The Marine Highway road system is on the federal aid to highway system.
Yes, it's a highway.
Right.
There might be some confusion with some, but not with, the chairman of the Transportation Committee. So, we have anybody in the room wants to testify? Okay. We will then close public testimony. We'll ask the bill sponsor to come forward. Senator Wilson.
Yeah, then I guess that clarification, if the Marine Highway is a federal highway, it thus would be illegal to drive onto that federal highway with this off-road license, so you would be stuck on your current location if you have an off-road vehicle. I just want to get that legal clarification, if I could, Mr. Chair.
Senator Wilson, we've asked the bill sponsor to work on that, and I'm sure he's going to work on that with enthusiasm. We requested from the chairman, and he'll come back with clarification on that issue. So that's duly noted. Do we have any final questions for the bill sponsor before we hear final comments from the bill sponsor's representative?
No, thank you, Chairman.
Okay, and then you can get with my office, and we'll work on that information flow and take care of that. With that, we're going to set this bill aside for further review. That concludes the meeting today. There, we will set the schedule for next week. Today, by four o'clock, as the rules state, we will adjourn this meeting now. Just a second, Senator Egan.
Just a brief reminder, Mr. Chair. There will be donuts on Tuesday.
Okay. We will make sure that Senator Egan takes good care of his fellow committee members from his unruly staff. That concludes the meeting today at 2:41 and a half. We are adjourned.